Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona Kay, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out we were a neurodiverse couple until our 29th year of marriage. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And my hope is that the information shared in this podcast will help you understand the strengths, differences, and challenges in your neurodiverse relationship as you move forward in life. Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. Welcome back to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I am so excited to be having this conversation with a guest who has been on the podcast before, and she also was a presenter at the Neurodiverse Love Conference. And her name is Dr. Jill Crivelli. And Jill is doing some really cutting edge work in the area of neurodiversity. And I have invited her back to share what she is doing to help so many folks throughout the United States in her practice. So, Jill, I know it's been a while, but welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, this is going to be a great conversation. So I'd love if we could start by you sharing a little bit about the work that you do and your neurodiverse compass method and some of the things that we talked about in the first podcast that you did. But there are a lot of folks who maybe haven't listened to it or listened to it a long time ago. So can you share a little bit about kind of your work that you've been doing, and then we'll get into what you're doing now, the new stuff.
I'd love to. Yeah, thanks for asking. So I'm the founder of the ND Compass, which is an integrative method for working with complex couples. And when I say complex couples, I mean that there's one or more difference that the couple's managing that makes the normal process of differentiating not only challenging, but traumatizing for both partners. And a population that experiences this phenomenon at a very high rate is neurodiverse partners. And so I have, worked heavily for many, many years with neurodiverse partners, meaning that one or both has a neurodistinction of ADHD, autism or trauma, or a combination thereof. And the core processes within the compass, which has made it so, impactful working with this population, is the core processes, one of education, which expands the perspective of each partner and develops a common language between them that, now we have a bridge and almost like a Rosetta Stone that we can communicate better. Niche construction, which is putting rituals and practices that are not organically occurring in the partnership in place that meet the needs of both partners and gives a repeatable roadmap for key processes to occur, like communication, connection, and skillful conflict. And then differentiation, which dates back to the work of Murray Bowen back in the 70s. But differentiation basically means each partner being able to tolerate showing up as they are and tolerate allowing the other to show up. And it really supports balancing attachment and independence without anxiety. So those were the three prongs of the compass for a long time: education, niche construction, and differentiation. But what I've been working on and I've rolled out last year is this fourth prong of the compass, which we know every compass has four directions. So it just took mine a while to reveal itself. And it's autonomic reset. Because what I've noticed, over time is that no matter how hard couples are working, there are biological things that are getting in the way of them being able to sustain the process. Chronic relationship trauma has kind of worn away the dendrites in their brain. And so the neuroplasticity of their brain has been impacted from the trauma over time. And frankly, this population oftentimes has trauma from, you know, family of origin and education systems and as well.
Right.
So, you know, this chronic relationship trauma has affected the neuroplasticity of the brain, has them stuck. And also, there's this concept called memory consolidation, which describes how we have these experiences in the partnership that now is this body of evidence, right, of our experiences, that it's only natural and normal. Our brain in the present moment brings it up and hijacks us, right? And so it's really hard to ignore the safety mechanism of our, you know, neurobiological function that keeps showing up and getting in the way. Even if the couple is making some progress, this memory consolidation can come up and sort of, you know, provide an off ramp to them being able to sustain their efforts. And so it felt really important for autonomic reset to be a really important part of finding a way to help the couple kind of clear out those biological roadblocks so they could, you know, do this work. And it started with me, you know, learning and practicing EMDR, which is a really well-researched, you know, trauma intervention. And when I started seeing the healing from EMDR that happened in 1 to 6 sessions that people had worked a lifetime to accomplish, I just got so energized with the possibility that there are interventions that could, you know, support this autonomic reset. And so I really set out to do research and see if I could uncover any other such interventions, which led me to what I'm doing now in the field of psychedelics.
And okay. Well, let me just say, Jill, I mean, I think you're on the cutting edge in this field, and you have been since the first time we talked. I was so excited with our first conversation before we even did the podcast. I just think that you're always searching for new ways to help folks that are trying to live their best lives and their most authentic lives, but yet the science hasn't necessarily caught up to how to do this when you're a different neurotype than, you know, most people out there in the world. And so I love EMDR. I have several colleagues that practice it, and I know the change can be so quick and so effective. So thank you for adding that to your toolbox. So the autonomic reset piece, I think, is so critical for folks to understand. And what you're talking about there is like the nervous system, right? Our nervous system dysregulation, or is it more than that? Before we go on to the second point we want to talk about.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. Autonomic nervous system is our safety system. And in, you know, the population, the neurodiverse partner population, many times, you know, by the time I see people, their autonomic nervous system has been switched on for years. Mm-hmm. And it's not meant to function. All the chemistry that's involved with your autonomic nervous system being in the, you know, the safety, fight, flight, freeze, fawn, it's so hard on the body. It's not sustainable metabolically. And there's a real cost to the individual and to the relationship. We really need to care about it and find ways that people can reset that system and go into their rest, digest, peace mode. It's just such an important piece for a happy life, for good relating, and frankly, for people feeling like themselves. One of the things I hear so much, especially from neurotypical partners, is this has changed who I am. Like, I don't feel like myself. And so, you know, being able to help people feel like themselves again is pretty rewarding work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, I always say this in the couple support groups that I facilitate, when partners are trying to understand each other as the autistic or autistic ADHD partner is unmasking, I can't imagine what it would be like to live your whole life not knowing that you were autistic or autistic ADHD. I mean, I recently discovered in the last few years that I am ADHD, And it wasn't traumatic for me. It was actually very enlightening and empowering for me. And I didn't have to do a lot of work to kind of reimagine myself as 60-year-old Mona, who now identifies as ADHD. But I hear so many people talk about their shame and their guilt and, you know, all of those feelings and things we've experienced when we didn't understand our brains and our neurotype can cause a lot of dysregulation and trauma. So I really want the listeners to know, Jill, about the next phase of your work. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now.
Yeah, and if it's okay, I want to start with some basic brain science, or what we know from research from the population that's involved in neurodiverse partners. So just some bullet points of what we know from research. So let's look at autistic individuals. We know from research that there's altered functional and structural organization of the DMN, the default mode network in the brain. We know that this default mode network difference contributes to the ability to attend to socially relevant stimuli. We know that this difference in the DMN contributes to the ability to decode the mental states of self and others. We know that there's reductions in GABA, a neurotransmitter with autistic individuals. So that's just a blurb that we know from research with autism. Let's look at ADHD. We know the DMN has many differences that contributes to social dysfunction. We know that there are lower level of neurotransmitters in individuals with an ADHD brain, specifically serotonin, GABA, norepinephrine, and dopamine. Let's look at brains impacted by trauma. We know, and I'm going to go into a little bit of a neurobiology lesson here. Is that okay, Mona?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So let's to talk about trauma. I just want to do a little bit of a deeper dive from things that maybe summoning things we all learned, I don't know, middle school or high school. So neurons are the fundamental cell of the brain. On those neurons are axons, which is kind of a long fiber that transmits the messages to dendrites of other neurons. So these dendrites are these nerve fibers that receive messages and kind of are responsible for the interconnection between neurons. So we have 14 to 16 billion neurons every day, firing just in our cerebral cortex alone. And they pass impulses to each other between axons and dendrites, and they don't actually touch. They sort of have to jump, right? These neurotransmitters jump. And what we know is that there's many kind of neurotransmitters that do that jump between the axons and the dendrites. And we know that constant high levels of this autonomic nervous system being switched on and the stress hormone cortisol makes neurons atrophy. They shrivel, they shrink. The dendrites go from this large, dense number that can spread branches far and wide to these short, stubby branches that have fewer connections. A lot of pictures out there and research that shows, you know, healthy dendrites that have all these kind of little fibrous tentacles to traumatized dendrites that just have this stubby nubs. These changes in the dendrites actually kind of gets people stuck, that their neurons can now not communicate. And this is what we talk about as the neuroplasticity of the brain has been impacted. And we see this in trauma, in depression, and anxiety, this kind of stuck biological situation, which really puts somebody in a no-win situation. They try to get something going behaviorally. Their brain can't support, you know, the long-term sustenance of it because these neurons are not firing. So what we know about brains that have been impacted by trauma is they have this impact to their dendrites. They have this file down, they have this neuroplastic stuckness. So now let me switch to what my research revealed as I started looking at the plethora of research out there right now on psychedelics. So we know that psilocybin is largely active on serotonin 5-HT2 receptor. We know that ketamine is most active on the glutamate system. We know that both these allies have very strong scientific and clinical efforts, evidence supporting them, and countless stories that people have demonstrated healing and supportive experiences. So let's just look at ketamine for a second. It was developed as an anesthetic in the 60s, and it worked by triggering a glutamate release. It was great for use on the battlefield because it was fast acting, it was fast ending, and it didn't suppress breathing. Well, researchers in the 90s discovered that depression had, the glutamate system was implicated in depression. And so in the 90s, they started looking for a drug to target the glutamate system. Well, ketamine was already being used at Yale in very small doses with people who are severe depression because they knew ketamine acted on the glutamate system, and the results were really successful. So what ketamine does is it upregulates production in neurons, and it releases this thing called brain-derived neurotrophic factor, short name BDNF. What BDNF does is it fertilizes the brain. It enhances neuroplasticity. It actually supports the growth of those dendrites and regenerates what trauma had previously withered away. The pictures are stunning. After even just one exposure to ketamine, before and after functional MRI pictures of the dendrites, they've repopulated and regenerated.
That's amazing. That's amazing, Jill.
It really and truly is amazing. Now, I want to say that not everybody is eligible, right? In order to ethically, clinically, responsibly use these compounds, it needs to be done with a licensed therapist. You need an assessment. It's something that it has its reputation as a club drug. This is not that. This is a very clinical experience in a very safe, controlled atmosphere. So ketamine has the capacity to regenerate what trauma has taken away. And there is lots and lots of, studies out there and research out there supporting that. So now let me do a deep dive into psilocybin. Okay. So whereas ketamine is working on the glutamate system, psilocybin works on the serotonin system. And it increases the presence of dopamine in the basal ganglia, very implicated in ADHD. It works on the dopaminergic system that is oftentimes implicated in ADHD. It alters glutamate levels, and it dampens the default mode network that is so heavily implicated in autistic individuals and in individuals with ADHD. And so its impact on the DMN make it really interesting for this, these populations. So here are the key themes that emerge from work with psilocybin. A theme of existential spiritual, meaning, development of the spiritual and having mystical experiences, mindfulness, giving people freedom from rumination, a more flexible identity, a greater compassion for the self, body aware, having more embodiment and being able to release trauma at the cellular somatic level, affective and cognitive theme, being able to transform emotions and update core beliefs, increase acceptance of emotions, relationally, being able to repattern relationships, being able to increase interpersonal openness, and then also a theme of being able to keep momentum, building motivation for putting new habits and changes in one's life.
That is phenomenal. I mean, to think that somebody could go through this with a licensed therapist, and I know you're going to talk a little bit about your co-leader, who's a nurse, and all that trauma and all that, and I'm going to say the word dysfunction that they've looked at, that they've had in their life, in their relationship, at work, with family, and there may be shame or guilt or other feelings that they've had, and they've felt maybe there's no way for me to afford, you know, a lifetime of therapy, as I've discovered more about myself. There is hope. And like you said, not everybody is eligible. Not everybody is the right person for this type of therapy. But the fact that we're able to talk about this now on the Neurodiverse Love podcast, at least it's going to give some people, you know, hope in areas they may not have had hope in before, without having to go through maybe years of therapy.
Exactly. And, you know, the themes that I hear are, this helped me feel like myself again. This helped me get unstuck. You know, people that have done a lot of work and feel like the results are, you know, they're white knuckling, or the results are not commensurate with the efforts that they've put in. Oftentimes these allies provide, you know, a neuroplastic reset and a window of opportunity where they can cement and really realize the benefits of the work that they've done. And so I'm so glad that you reinforce that everyone is not eligible, because I tend to get so excited that, you know, I don't want to come off that it's, you know, a miracle cure, although sometimes right. I do honestly feel that way, but it's another option. It's just another thing. It's another tool in the toolbox, not for everyone, but definitely should be a part of the conversation, you know, these days. And so this is what, you know, what I have created an offering that I'm, you know, launching and offering to people. So I have two groups that I'm launching. And groups are a really interesting way, I think, to launch something like this, because it's a double amplifier, meaning that you get the benefit of being in a group and you get the benefit of this innate healing neuroplastic reset. So my co-leader, Mary Bethia, who is a nurse, and I are leading these two groups. The first group is a ketamine group for women in complex relationships. It starts in May. There's an on-site in Oregon here on June 7th through 9th. And what's good to know about it is it's not a process group, right? And so there's, you know, process group is where you're, you know, getting together and you're learning and you're expressing yourself and experiencing validation, and you're sharing ideas for things that you can do. And it's an amazing thing to have process groups. They're a really important part of healing and learning and journeys. But this is not a process group. This is an intervention. This is where we have three preparation sessions by Zoom to prepare for the experience. And then we have the experience of, you know, two dosing sessions with ketamine in Oregon. And then we have three integration, where we then make sense of our experience in a group environment. And so, you know, that's what we're launching in the spring. And in the fall, we're doing a complex couples group. And that will be on site September 26th through 28th. In the state of Oregon, there is the legal, safe, regulated use of psilocybin at a service center. And I am a certified, as well as my co-leader, Mary Bethia, certified facilitator for that experience. And it's similar, where there are, you know, coaching sessions prior to arrival to, you know, get ready for the experience, and then their integrations afterward to make sense of the experience. And so that's my offering as a group. I also offer, you know, I have a pretty long wait list for couples, and so I'm doing more work these days, providing adjunct services to individuals that are already working with a therapist, but perhaps want to come to me in collaboration with a collaborative care model with their therapist for up to 6 sessions for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, if you're in a state that I'm licensed in, or travel to a state I'm licensed in, which is New Jersey, Oregon, and Washington, or EMDR, or ND Compass Basics. So, you know, it's called adjunct therapy. It's in coordination with your therapist. And there is no wait list for those, because I can, you know, get 6 sessions in with somebody around kind of my regular client load and my regular teaching load. I teach in the counseling program as well. So those are all the things that I'm doing. And I'm just so grateful to have the space to talk about them. Was there any questions or anything I missed?
Well, I don't know enough about it to ask you questions, but I think this is phenomenal. And what you've done in, you know, a half hour conversation is you've simplified this for those folks that have thought about it, have heard about it, because I listen to tons of podcasts and there's so many podcasts out there that are talking about this. People are offering this all over the world. Yeah. And to know that you're licensed in 3 states, that you'll work collaboratively with other people's therapists, and that if they want to go through this process, they're going to have to come out to Oregon to be with you, right? But you don't go outside of Oregon. Is that correct to do this?
The psilocybin has to occur inside of the state of Oregon. Okay. This is the only state that this is, you know, this is a legal, you know, state regulated, safe, you know, experience. With ketamine, it can occur in, first off, ketamine therapy can occur in any state. There's numerous types. There's IV, there's intramuscular, and there's sublingual. I work with sublingual, which is a very gentle experience. It's kind of like a deeply meditative state. And the group is occurring inside of the state of Oregon. But if people come to me for couples or individual ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, it can happen in Oregon, Washington, or New Jersey. Either.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So, and then you can learn more about all of this at my learning site, which is ndpartnerscompass.com. So you'll see that the groups are up there, and I've kind of put like a little free mini course on each of the group to help further your education as you're exploring. You know, these interventions really require education, exploration. No one should ever feel coerced. People should really look at the pros and the cons of, you know, their use and assess, hey, is this right for me? And then there's links if someone wants to explore more. I offer free consults.
That's phenomenal. And Jill's website or learning site is phenomenal. She's like basically done 10 dissertations and put it all on her website. And so I will put those links in the show notes for anybody that's interested.
Thanks. The learning site is ndpartnerscompass.com. My website is ndpartnersinstitute.com.
Okay. Okay, and I will put all that in the show notes. And so just to reiterate, the ketamine group is for the neurotypical partners who are interested in being part of this group. Is there a maximum number of people that participate in the group?
Yes, we're only taking up to 8 people in the group.
Okay.
You know, there's very, you know, you need to have impeccable ethics when you're working with these medicines. And so Mary and I, you know, are bound ethically and responsibly to really control the ratio of people to support person people. And so the same with the, you know, the psilocybin group, there'll only be up to 4 couples. And, you know, we'll see. We're hoping to be able to repeat the groups many times and expand the populations that we offer. We hope to be able to offer a group for the neurodistinct partners as well.
Phenomenal. And is this, because I'm sure people are going to ask or want to know, is this covered by any kind of insurance?
Yeah, great question. And so there are pieces that of the experience that might be covered by insurance. And that part of the consult, I would, you know, be able to work with people to figure that out.
Fantastic. Okay, Jill, thank you so much for being willing to share kind of the foundation of why you're moving in this direction, a little bit about the work you've been doing for many, many, many years, and for exploring this and being so cognizant of the need for more tools for folks that are struggling in their relationship and those folks that are, you know, struggling individually and want to live their most authentic life, want to be happy, want to be peaceful, want to have, you know, ways to regulate their nervous system and not be in that, you know, state of fight or flight all the time. So I really, really, really appreciate it. I'll make sure everything is in the show notes so people know how to reach out to you. And thank you just for all the amazing work that you do for folks that really need it and don't necessarily know where to turn. This has been so helpful for me too, because I'm always looking for ways to share more information with my community.
Yeah, I know you are. You're so good at that. Well, I have to tell you, you know, I offer a course for therapists to teach them the ND Compass method. And I was recently revising some training films, and I had visceral responses to my slides on supporting people to stay in their window of tolerance and on the topic of autonomic reset, talking about the amazing interventions that are out there, like meditation and breath work and somatic body work and all these things. But, you know, I just noticed I was cringing because it just feels for some people that just tirelessly do this work, like it's such a long-term, sustained, expensive ask for people living in this situation to basically become, you know, a guru meditating, especially if their neuro, biological preferences make it hard for them. It just felt like, a painful ask. I just felt really bad that, just meditate every day and then do this and do that and do that. And then over time, eventually you're going to rewrite your brain pathways. It was just that thing that I felt just really bad about, that there wasn't a better answer. And so, I'm just really thrilled that other supportive tools along with those important tools can now exist and be accessible to eligible people.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. And, you know, this is such a new field, you know, working with neurodiverse couples and working with adults who are either late identified or late diagnosed, and they've lived their whole life, you know, masking or camouflaging and, you know, not knowing what their true identity is. And now, you know, as the field begins to expand, of course, there's going to be more therapeutic modalities and tools that will help people. And what a great summary you gave for so much, I think, in-depth information that I wouldn't have the time to read the research on. So I really appreciate that, Jill. Is there anything else that you want to share before we close out this episode of the podcast?
Well, I don't know, you know, if this is something you want to put in your podcast, but I will share because I've heard you mention a couple times of people that were, you know, have been late diagnosed and are discovering perhaps they're autistic. And that is a real journey that there's a book I really appreciate and I lean on a lot that I'll share for you, you know, share with you.
Yeah.
And I don't have any relationship right now with the author, but I'd like to. And it's called A Neurodiversity Blueprint, Loving Your Place on the Spectrum by Jude Morrow. It's really a beautiful book. And I think it really helps people that are in that situation who are getting a diagnosis late in life and are trying to figure out and unpack what does this mean. There's something about how the book talks and normalizes and makes it, you know, really perfectly fine to have an autistic style of a brain that I really appreciate.
That's awesome. Yeah, I have had an opportunity to meet Jude
Oh, good.
through Zoom. Yeah, he asked me to do a session for his community, and it was just a wonderful experience. I haven't had him on the podcast yet, but I just have the utmost respect for him. So maybe I'll reach out to him now and get him on the podcast so he can talk about, more about his work. So thank you so
Yeah.
much for that recommendation. I'll add that to my website too. I don't think I have his book on there yet. All right. Well, thank you,
Okay.
Jill, so much. I really, really appreciate everything you're doing. And hopefully, a lot of people will be able to benefit from this new work you're doing at the ND Compass.
Thank you so
Yes.
much, Mona, for all you do. I appreciate you.
Same to you. I appreciate you immensely. Thanks, Jill.
Okay, bye.